Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.
Where nature is harsh and demanding, where only the quick and the strong and the deadly can survive. This place is no place for civilized man.
I want my land.
Kick it in the guts, Barry.
Far away from my
All you've got to do now is pass the Australian culture test. Three simple questions, three correct answers,
you get all this
and
together?
You go through that doorway to the greatest little country in the world.
Good morning, everybody. This is Annie for Showreel, 3CR's look at the Australian film industry. And today we're going to go to a conversation that was had as part of a webinar series from the Documentary Australia. It's a public series, and it's a masterclass impact producer program that they've got running. And it was earlier in the year. It's Mitzi Goldman, who is from Documentary Australia, having a chat with the writer and co-director of Like My Brother and one of the producers. So we've got Sel Bell Harry, who's the co-director and writer of Like My Brother, and one of her executive producers, Petrina Dorrington. And what they're talking about is fundraising and building partnerships for anybody who wants to make a documentary. If they want to make a film, of course, this is the nub, isn't it? How do you get your money? So this is the chat they had.
Yeah, I'm Sel Bell Harry. I'm a writer, director and creative producer. I came through to film through the advertising world and communications world, and then about sort of 15 years ago started really writing and developing up my own films and concepts and shows. Like My Brother is my first feature film. I started making it in 2017, so it was a very long-spanning journey. It follows some incredible young women on their journey to become elite sportswomen through the world, through the lens of AFLW. But it's really a Trojan horse about who has the right to dream in Australia. And I am a bit of a hybrid in that I work both in scripted and non-scripted. So I have a company, Naked Emperor, that does all of my factual work, and then Goddess Pictures, which is the unscripted work. And I'm here joined by my incredible friend, Petrina Dorrington, who can introduce herself, but I wouldn't be here without Petrina as far as fundraising goes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so Petrina Dorrington, and I'm an accidental EP. I started off working in hotel management, and then I was working in regional tourism in outback Queensland. Then I became a CEO of a youth homelessness organisation in Melbourne, which is where I learnt my fundraising skills. So I did that for 10 years, and I worked in doing projects for not-for-profits. I had a year at the Melbourne International Film Festival as a general manager. And somewhere along the line, there was obviously an interest in film because my friends and I decided to start our own film festival because we thought, how could we make films? Let's start our own film festival. So we had this 5-minute film festival, which started off in screening in a restaurant and then ended up 10 years later being screened at ACME and raising funds for homelessness. So maybe it was meant to be along the way.
I'm sure we will.
Yeah, later. At some point, yes. Then I ended up working with Sal on Like My Brother for almost 3 years, yeah.
So, take us back to the beginning. Tell us a little bit about how you got involved with this story and why you wanted to make it.
Yeah. Well, I grew up in a footy-mad household. Footy is the glue, the fabric of our family through sport. My dad was a footy player, and so it was the culture of our family. The 6th of February 2017, my son came home and said, Well, you drive us across town, there's a footy match on. I was like, it's the middle of summer, what's going on? He said, oh, it's the first AFLW game. And I was like, oh, mate, I've had such a huge week. And he said, oh, that is so disappointing. And I was like, oh, God, here I go. I've failed again as a mother. Why is this so disappointing? And he said, because you raised me to be a feminist. And I was like, oh, God, he's playing the feminist game. Get in the car, we're going. And we went to see this game, and it was incredible. It was the first time that I'd seen women playing footy, and I was like, why hasn't this happened years ago? And it looked so, the crowd was so, it was so fresh and it was so new. And I guess because I had this tie to the Tiwi through my dad, I was watching this game, I was like, what's missing? It's so incredibly white. And I am drawn to stories of fairness and kindness and equity and access. And so here was this moment where I thought, oh, what's it going to take for Indigenous girls to find their way to this game? What's that going to look like? And then obviously looking for a story that has drama and conflict. You know, the Tiwi's there, Melbourne's there, distance, tyranny of distance straight away. So, and I started to craft this story, and you don't just jump on a plane and go. You know, you come up with documents and you start thinking about how would the, and you speak to the land council and you sit on the ground and you know, and eventually I found my way to the Tiwi and started to build this team and made lots of mistakes along the way, but ended up with this incredible team of women and some incredible male EPs as well. But yeah, that was kind of where the spark of the story came. And you know, proudly I'm the only non-Indigenous creative in the team that ended up sort of making this film. I'm a co-director. I directed it with Danielle McLean, who's a dear, dear friend. And I'd actually written on a show back in 2016 with Danielle. So we knew, you know, I'd been trying to drag her onto this project. But then you need money. And you're making a film from Melbourne in the most expensive, most difficult terrain that you can possibly do, and so we need a lot of money, and I found that very difficult to be the creator and to be, you know, I'm asking for people to fund my vision, to fund me personally, and I found that very difficult until I found somebody like Petrina to come on board. And she came on board at a time I had received funding from Shark Island, and I was established with Documentary Australia, and I had a terrible shoot, July 2022, terrible. Everything that could possibly go wrong went wrong. Everything went wrong. Generators got made, everything went wrong. Down to, you know, just the... And I called you, Mitzi, and I said, this is just too hard. I'm going to give you the money back. And you said, you can't take the money back. It doesn't work like that. And you gave me really fabulous advice, which was to take some time and step away. And it was about that time that the universe sent me Petrina. I had was that I thought I'd be done and dusted in 2 years. I seriously did. I thought I had a story where a girl was going to hold a trophy above her head. And that was actually the story I sold to the production companies, that as in sold, as in how I got them involved. I thought that was, but then COVID hit and then you have to pivot. And the pivot was actually either walking away from the story or staying with it and seeing where it went. And that was very difficult because I was then saying to Petrina, everyone was saying, well, how does it end? I was like, I don't know how it ends. Well, that's a very difficult thing to say in a documentary to funders. I don't know how, I'm making this fabulous story. I'm incredibly passionate about it. I have no idea how it's going to end. Mm. I don't really know where the story's going. But come with me on this journey because it's going to be so much fun.
No, it's very hard. So
I said, you can't give up.
You found Petrina.
You must do this film.
Well, no, so. You said, I will work for you for free.
Yes, I did say that, and I did.
Wow. Yes. And so how did that come about? Tell us a little bit from Sal's perspective first.
I'd made a film for Kids Undercover. And we were also really great mates. We were part of a very famous book group that broke, and that was where we bonded.
That's another story.
But Petrina, it was actually off the... Petrina was very involved with the referendum, the yes vote, and that turned out to be the no vote. And you, the sort of alignment of that, I mean, you'd been involved with me before that, but that was like a high octane. You know, you mentioned the Dyson bequest. The Dysons were unbelievably supportive of, like, my brother. And so Petrina just is absolutely relentless, and you were not, she just wasn't going to say, wasn't going to see this film not made. And I think I was absolutely passionate about the story. But, I mean, you know, too, it's with a really small team. Like, I couldn't do the fundraising and the story. I just, my brain just couldn't factor the two things in. It was just not...
Well, it's too much work anyway.
And they're different. It's a bit of a different skill set.
It's a different skill set.
In a way, because one, you have to go in deep and immerse yourself completely, and the other, you're looking outside externally. So I'm going to bounce back and forth between you a little bit now.
Can I just say to that point, the thing that I think I was, because I was managing the relationships and we were getting no, I couldn't actually say to my guys, hey, the world doesn't want this story made. Or we, like, I had to be very mindful of, you know, it's a very personal thing.
So yes, for the that, community.
For the community, yeah.
Yeah, and you have a sense of responsibility to them because they've let you in. So,
yeah,
Petrina, what was it, apart from your friendship, obviously, with Sal, that made you offer this gift of partnership, you know, to come on board?
Well, I was lucky that I had retired from my work, and so I was in a position where I didn't need to work, and I knew Sal didn't have any money, and I just felt so passionate about wanting to do something to amplify Indigenous stories, etc. And yeah, so it was just a privilege to be involved, and Sal has thanked me many, many times, more than she needs to, and honestly, I would have paid to be involved in it. It was such a fantastic experience. I just loved it, and I just jumped in, boots and all, and I just spent every... whenever I had spare time, I was on that, and I did whatever Sal... I tried to put myself into her shoes. What would make her life easier apart from funding? It could be spell checking, it could be... hey, your website needs updating, or have you thought of this? And just anything, and just someone to talk to as well when things weren't going right.
You know, we often say that people fund people, and at the heart of any successful fundraising is a relationship between people. And this is clear. That can happen at any level. It can be between the funder and the filmmaker or the organisation, but it's also the key creatives, the filmmaker and the participants. You know, relationships are central to all the work that we do.
Yeah.
And how you carry yourself as a human and how you show appreciation and all of those things play in to the ability to actually get other people on board to support your vision.
And the energy of that is infectious. I think, you know, I was so excited by the story and the team, and so when Petrina met those guys as well, and you were incredible that you, like, you came, funded herself to come to the shoots as well, so you could speak...
Mind babies and did all
yeah,
that stuff.
Mind babies. But it meant that you could speak to donors quite passionately about the relationships that were coming out of the film. I mean, that was the other thing too, is that, you know, she really...
My name's Nicholas Rothall. I've directed this film, Undermined, Tales from the Kimberley. You're listening to 3CR.
And yeah, you are. You're on Showreel, and we're in the middle of listening to a conversation coming out of Documentary Australia's Masterclass Impact producer program. It's a conversation between Mitzi Goldman and Sal Bell-Harry, who's the co-director and writer of Like My Brother, and Bettina Dorrington, executive producer for the project. If you want to see Like My Brother, it's actually on SBS On Demand. This is their last part of the conversation. What they're focusing on is how to get money to make your film.
So let's get into the nitty-gritty of the fundraising. So there was the Documentary Australia, Shark Island Foundation came on early. I think you got some development funding as well from one of the agencies.
Film Victoria, Screen Victoria. So we had 86 philanthropists mm-hmm. gave money to the film.
Well, before Petrina.
No, in the scale.
So in the beginning, you had the kind of traditional avenues, if you like, mm-hmm. the Vic Screen.
The Bank of Salval Harry.
Yeah, the Bank of Salval Harry, Documentary Australia, Shark Art, and then Petrina joins you. And so what happened next?
Yeah, so, well, the first thing I did was I did a lot of research. I spent days and days and days researching, coming up with ideas of where we might be able to get money. I joined the Philanthropy Australia, took out a subscription for a year so I could get all the information on where we would meet the criteria of the funders. And I put together a spreadsheet with all the potentials. Then I looked at who do we know in those organisations. I checked out every board member, if that was available, that was on the foundations. I went to LinkedIn. I tried to find out if there were people I knew that knew those people that could do introductions. I really did try and use my own networks. Definitely don't underestimate your networks, because you just never know who you know that might know somebody who's a friend of somebody in an accounting firm or a law firm or in a foundation. There's all sorts of opportunities that you might not have thought of, but it's obviously very time consuming. I had a massive spreadsheet that was color coded into, you know, who was likely, unlikely, you know, definite no's, bingo, we got some money, that was green light. Lots of columns with who is the bright person to talk to, what sort of things do they fund, who's our connection, what conversation, exactly what conversation I had with them, what follow-up I had, what dates, who's the best person to update them, all of that sort of stuff, every single detail, so that I didn't have to rely on my memory.
Mm-hmm. And what were you going to them with?
I was going to them with a fabulous
We had
sizzle.
Really great reel. Material and we
it
had
was,
a really
it was
great
very,
sizzle.
Yeah, it was this type of... I never got bored with seeing that sizzle reel. It was just, to me, it was very evocative.
Yeah.
And also you had a great... You put together a great pitch document with some fantastic photos. We're very lucky to have that material.
Yeah.
So that's mainly what I would go with. First of all, I would see if I could have a conversation with somebody. Some of the foundations you need to have a conversation, some you need to put in an application, so it was very different. So yeah, I did do some funding applications as well.
Were you approaching people who'd never funded film before?
Yes, and then one of the funders had funded projects that I'd done in the past, and I didn't know that they were interested in film at all, but I approached them anyway. And then it turned out, well, yes, we are interested in film. And so they ended up giving us a significant donation. So, I mean, I could have easily said they're not a candidate, because it's that wasn't their regular criteria, from as far as I knew. They came back a second time as well.
The other thing that I would add to that, I think everyone's kind of interested in film and stories now and content. And particularly with younger demographics. I mean, we were relentless. We used every opportunity to, you know, I used Australia Day or Invasion Day, whichever way you see it, as an opportunity to send out an email to a group of 100 women. And I said, like, I don't even know if any of you are interested in this, but one of you will be, or one of you will know somebody who will. And I got a phone call, you know, from Susie Montague, who'd been sent that from somebody, offering just... I'd never met Susie, and it was a huge amount of money. Like, I just remember walking around in circles that day. Oh. I was just couldn't see the world. I was just so blown away.
But was that through a conduit, or just you had these email addresses, personal email
No,
addresses?
They were, it's a, you know, I had 100 email. Like, I knew everybody in the email, but mm-hmm. Susie, like, when she sent me the chain, mm-hmm. it was 2 degrees. It was mm-hmm. two. Somebody had sent it to her and somebody had sent mm-hmm. it to somebody else, mm-hmm. you know, to get that. But that was just a phone call off the bat. And she had a cat. She loves fishing. She has a mad connection to the Tiwi. Mm-hmm. And so mm-hmm. that was the connection to Susie. You know, I think the other thing too is teams, people investing in teams. And Susie knew of Petrina through me. And so, you know, there was just these, she's in this, the MIF circle, I think it's called. So there's always these little connections, little sparks. But the thing that really kicked that was Women Will Solve This Problem. And that was what she loved. She loved the title of the email.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We definitely had people that had never funded film before, and they were like, oh, how do we do that? Oh,
you know, we need a tax deduction. We're like, how? Documentary Australia, this is how you do it.
Yeah.
And also, you had to kind of just talk them through how, like, if they were used to giving to a project in a charity, how this could work in a different way to be something with great outcomes. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, it was pretty amazing how people were brave enough to go, okay, yeah, we'll do something a bit different and we'll see see how that works.
And were these face-to-face meetings or emails, phone calls?
Everything just depended on, like everything from cold calling through a website or... But usually I try to go through connections, and I even got friends to ask other people. So one friend knew someone at a foundation and she made the approach on our behalf, and they said, look... Look, we don't have anything at the moment. And then about 2 days before the end of the financial year, the person from the foundation texted me and said, Petrina, do you still need money for that documentary? Yes, I do. Mm-hmm. And gave a significant donation just because her friend, she sort of knew me, but not that well, but her friend had put in the approach and she had donated as well. I've donated. Would you like to donate as well?
Mm-hmm. So, curious to know, we found the final gap of the finance plan really hard to fill. Because I think everyone sort of thinks, oh, well, you've got all this money now. You'll find that last bit really easily. But that was a pain in the neck.
Yeah,
we had Bright Moon come in at the end.
I remember that phone call too.
Okay, that was a two-year thing of trying to...
That was a two-year thing.
To try and even get access.
Yeah.
So this was a major donation that came through... from a foundation that actually
in Darwin
that we didn't really have a history with either. Tell us how that came about.
We had different angles of people who suggested this particular foundation. I tried to contact them, no answer. They had a contact form in the website, no answer. Sal spoke to our Tiwi producers. We didn't really get anywhere with that. Oh, we sort of know them. They
It was actually Tammy in the end.
In the end, it was Tammy. But it took her 2 years before.
It was relentless.
She didn't really want to ask.
No.
They didn't really want to ask.
Tammy. Well, no, Tammy. It wasn't... Yeah, Tammy Abala. It was more...
Because they had a friendship, and I think culturally it wasn't kind of...
No, I don't think it was culturally. I think it's always... Because also, like, Rebecca Parker, our DOP, she's at school with his kids. And anyway, so it was all... It's a blur of, like, the personal and the business. That was... I think that was a bit of a blur.
Right,
But I think Bright Moon Foundation supports a lot of First Nations enterprises, and that's what was happening with Mamanta. So it was kind of just waiting for the right time. Has moved significantly into film. Because of that experience,
which is really...
Right. So, Bright Moon Trust.
Foundations and individual philanthropists often don't have time to go trawling through websites looking for projects that they want to support. But they do genuinely want to support exciting projects. And so, you know, one should never hold back from inviting them to become involved in something that they may not otherwise, you know, trip over.
And people who aren't interested in film, I think, are really good people to speak to.
Because they should be.
So all of this was going into your spreadsheet, you know, with the yes, no's, bingos. And at what point did you really feel the film was viable, and how did you kind of leverage that? You said the last gap was hard to fill.
I can sort of speak to that because I'm a big believer in sort it out later. And we had a date to launch at MIF, so our world premiere at the Melbourne International Film Festival, and we'd also signed a deal with Mushroom Studios to distribute. So we had to finish it, and we just couldn't not finish it. And we had a couple of hiccups in that we closed the finance gap, we got money, but we were not able to accept the money for cultural reasons within the team, and so that was like yes, no, and there were some really big learnings with that. But I never ever accepted that we wouldn't find that final money. It had to be out there, and we just had to find it.
And the end of the financial year did help. The timing of knowing that a lot of foundations, even though they've allocated all their funds, mostly, they might have some
left over at the end. It might be 10 or 20K and they actually need to spend that. So sometimes you can get the timing right and get something, like mostly you need to have your applications in months and months before, but sometimes you can be lucky and get something at the end of the financial year, and we had quite a few of those.
And we'll leave it there. That was part of the conversation that was had at Documentary Australian Masterclass Impact Producers Program that was the second in their series. They have a variety of things. So if you're interested in this, you should actually have a look at their website. It was a conversation between Mitzi Goldman from Documentary Australia and the writer, co-director, Sel Bell-Harry of Like My Mother, and the executive producer, Trina Dorrington. You can have a look at Like My Brother on SBS On Demand. Coming up next is Published or Not, and we'll go out with Joe Geyer. Good to see ya.
Yeah, there's a little new song here. See some familiar faces out there today. Good to see you again. And that's the title of the song. Good to see ya. Anyway.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au. You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.